Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. My guest is Alan Anderson. He is a keynote speaker at the 2015 Product Innovation Management Conference. For the past 20-plus years, he has been refining his skills in product development and change management, gaining three perspectives as a practitioner, academic, as well as serving in C-level roles in companies. He earned a PhD in product development from Massey University in New Zealand, where he's also a professor. Please go to theeverydayinnovator.com/043 for the show notes and details of our discussion. You're going to want to go there to get more specifics about the metrics and factors that we talked about for improving a new product development process. And I'll provide those specifics in the show notes. So go to theeverydayinnovator.com/043. I want to also tell you about productinnovationeducators.com. This is where I and others provide collaborative online training for product managers, developers, and innovators to propel their career success. Product Innovation Educators proudly sponsors this podcast. Now, on to the interview. Alan, thanks for talking about MPD performance metrics with us. Just to get grounded, I'm curious about your background. How did you get started in product development?
Well, Chad, it was a long time ago. I set out from school to attend university and ended up in a food technology course, which actually offered a major or a specialization in product development in its final 2 years. So that's basically how I initially got into product development and have been doing it pretty much for the rest of my life.
So this was a gut reaction. You just let your stomach lead you.
From a food perspective? Yes,
I guess so.
We had a teacher at school who had a close association with a local food company and introduced me to food technology within that company, which interested me at the time. And I went and looked at the food technology degree that was being offered, and that intrigued me. And so that's where it all started, basically.
And then have you stayed in the food industry, or have you migrated to other product development industries also? Products.
Yeah, in my early years, I was practicing in the food industry. I was a development manager in food companies. Mm-hmm. Then I went out to become a consultant, where I spread my wings a little bit and out into other industries, other products. Then I went back to the food industry as a chief executive within the New Zealand dairy industry in our country. And subsequently, these days, I'm a professor in the engineering school at Massey University, where we look at all kinds of products, and really food is not as important as it used to be for me.
Okay. So branched out to some other industries, but put that degree to good use, that actually a product development background to that food technology degree. We're lacking that a little bit in the United States. We don't have a lot of opportunities for, certainly at the undergraduate level, for product development kind of education, aside from maybe just one course. So nice that you got more of a grounding there.
Yes, and I think the interesting thing is, back in those days and even today at the university that I'm at now, product development is actually taught within the technology curriculum or the engineering curriculum within the university, not within the marketing or business curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We typically see it aligned with one or the other, and it really just kind of depends on the nature of the company, where they put it. So very good. Let's dive into the keynote. So in the description of your keynote speech for the Product Innovation Management Conference, you shared, I'll just read it verbatim, often there's very little understanding of the principles that truly underpin good MPD practice and how these principles should be applied within a specific company. So I'd like to unpack that a little bit. I wasn't sure if you're suggesting that, a one-size-fits-all kind of approach to product development doesn't work, if the best practices one place, might not work at another place. So unpack that statement for us some.
Okay. Well, first of all, my apologies if there's any perceived insult to consultants here, but I think over the years there's been a tendency for a number of companies to pick up specific manuals or models on product development that have been delivered by consultants or out of the literature. And they've ended up basically having a picture of a process, like a stage gate process or something like that, that they simply put on the wall in their organization and say, look, we follow a product development process. Aren't we good? But the reality of the situation is that often they don't really know what they're doing. They don't really know why they're doing it. And I've always referred to it as a paint by numbers approach. So I've been trying to encourage companies over a number of years now to really, really get to grips with the fundamental principles of product development and to come up with a process or processes that are appropriate to their particular company situation, to their particular products, their resource availability, and so on.
I think this is an excellent point, Alan. It's something I've encountered many times with companies. And unfortunately, many companies do when they get to the point that they want to, you know, be more innovative, you know, quote unquote, right? Some recognition of competitive pressure or the customer's changing, then we need more innovation. They want a solution given to them, right? That they want to go hire the consultant and have a process put in place. And too many times, it just... You know, they haven't done the work to really understand what their organization is about and what innovation would mean to them and what kind of process is really tuned well. And it was interesting. You might be aware of this story. I recently interviewed for another episode someone affiliated with Lego, and I went back and doing that research for Lego. And you know, we all grew up with Legos. I certainly played with the blocks when I was a kid. And these days I play with their Mindstorm robot kits with my kids. But there was a good book, I don't recall the title of offhand. You know, in the 90s, Lego was doing really bad. And by 2003, they lost $300 million that year. And at one point, the author of the book doing this analysis said they had brought in the late 90s, early 2000, you know, innovation expert after innovation expert, you know, that they tried it all and it just didn't stick, right? And it basically came down to, they had to figure out what was really driving them as a company to understand what would work for them for a new product development process. And I don't know if that, you know, relates to what you've seen, your experience, and if that kind of fits the same thing you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what got me into this way of thinking initially was being the chief executive of a research and development organization here in New Zealand. Which was part of the New Zealand dairy industry. Now, you probably don't know that the New Zealand dairy industry in New Zealand was legislated. So, in fact, it's a single-desk selling organization under government legislation. Now, that government legislation required five-year auditing of the business practices. Hmm. Part of the five-year auditing, there was a focus on research and development. Now, we brought in a number of international consultants to do this kind of auditing, including McKinsey's, BCG, Arthur D. Little. And what I learned out of that whole process was that basically we just got to tick the box process in terms of did we do this or did we do that, but we didn't learn very much out of it. So we, as a result of that, embarked on our own internal benchmarking process where we developed a model around new product development, which I've used now for many years, which I could explain very simply within our organization, which was basically you do the right things, choose the right products to work on, the right focus. Once you've decided which are the right things, you then do them right. So you choose the right processes and practices. And when you've completed that, you actually measure what you've achieved, and you wrap around that whole process an organization, a culture, and a climate, it actually makes you more effective. Now, once I explained that within the organization, we started looking at how we were performing under doing the right things, doing them right. Were we measuring the right things? Did we have the right culture and climate in place? Once we started looking at that within the organization, looking at the factors for success, across the whole organization, across various functions, I found that people became more intrigued about what led to success within our particular organization, and were keen to learn, keen to improve. And I found that extraordinarily effective. And I think it's the sort of thing that I would really like to see more companies doing today.
You know, it sounds like two big accomplishments from that work, that you had a process that was working for the organization for product development, but also really motivating and encouraging the employees to contribute in a way that was probably more fulfilling for them.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think the key thing in terms of, you know, product development as a learning part of the organization is getting people to recognize what processes work for them. So working together to learn about that and to put these processes and practices in place themselves is much more effective than taking something off the shelf from a consultant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's lots of choices to one can pick from, and they all have the right place. But I think it's understanding what is unique about the organization's culture, their experience with product development, to really suit them best, and not just blindly go down a path before knowing what questions to ask. So, talking about that, you talked about picking, you know, the right project to go after, making the right decisions along the way. So this all goes towards, you know, how do we track that? So you've been looking at metrics, and when it comes to new product development performance metrics that an organization can use to help them determine what really is important to them, how to continue learning, how to keep improving, what metrics are we talking about?
Okay, so, I mean, some people might say that my definition of metrics is not particularly correct or precise. I recognize the value of metrics in terms of reporting metrics like vitality index or number of patents, all those traditional type of what I call output or lagging metrics are really important from a reporting perspective. The issue for me is that basically they don't lead you to any form of learning. They don't tell you why you achieved something or why you didn't achieve something. So what I'm going to be talking about at the conference is what I call contributing metrics. So if we draw a comparison or a parallel with somebody who's trying to lose weight, you can stand on the scales and you can see the metric, which is the weight, the kilos or the pounds that are actually shown on the scales. But that doesn't necessarily tell you how to lose weight. It just tells you that you probably should lose weight. So then you need to come back to what I call the contributing metrics, which are drink less alcohol, eat the right food, do more exercise. Those are all contributing metrics that you can measure, that you can actually positively impact, that in turn will actually lead to you losing weight. And so in the case of product development, we can measure the outcome in terms of a vitality metric, but we then need to look back to within the organization what led to that. So it could be, do we have the right portfolio management techniques in place? Do we have the right cross-functional teams contributing to our product development? Do we place sufficient emphasis on the upfront, call it the fuzzy front end of product development? So it's focusing on those contributing metrics that I think is really important, and identifying which ones are important to our company that ultimately leads to more successful product development.
Okay. So this is a little bit of twist. When people hear the term metric, they might be thinking of, you know, how much money are we spending on research and development as a percentage of overall revenue? How long does it take us to get through a maybe a conceived part of a pipeline where we're really fleshing out a concept? You know, specific kind of metrics that drive maybe a stage gate process or some other kind of new product development process. These contributing metrics sound like, please correct me if I'm wrong, more the activities that if we know that if we do X, Y, and Z contributing metrics, then we'll get the result we expect on the outcome, these outcome metrics.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the point I'm going to try to make at the conference is that these days we have a pretty reasonable understanding of the factors that actually lead to successful product development. There's been a lot of work done through research in Journal of Product Innovation Management, a lot of research based on surveys with companies through the CPAS survey that's done every couple of years.
And can you tell us what the CPAS is?
It's the survey process that's actually carried out by PDMA of companies primarily in the United States, but over recent years that looks over recent years at companies across the world that looks at what defines the better performing companies ahead of the lesser performing companies in terms of their product development outputs. They've identified various factors that separate the best from the rest, basically. And this has been done now over a period of, I think, about maybe 15 or 20 years on a regular basis. The recent one was, I think, 2012. So that's just been published, I think, in the Journal of Product Innovation Management earlier this year.
Okay. So this leads me to the question then of what factors should we be thinking about that really drive a new product development process and help us to continually be improving it?
Well, again, I've divided the factors up into those three or four components I was talking about earlier. Okay. So I looked at the factors that contribute to doing the right things. And these are clearly factors like, do we have appropriate portfolio selection and portfolio management techniques in place? Is there a link to a business strategy that has a clear direction for product development and the contribution expected from product development? Is there clear support from senior management within the company? There are a number of the other factors like that and that we can identify as being important contributors to successful product development from research. I think the key is that knowing these factors, and we can all read about them, the key is then to look objectively within our own company critically assess whether or not we're actually how well we're performing against those specific factors. And then as a result of identifying where there are factors that we consider to be potentially weak within our company, to focus on either measuring or regularly referring and discussing how our performance against those factors.
So to go back to the earlier suggestion that the one-size-fits-all approach doesn't really work for a new product development process, but it does sound like that this framework of factors should be what's used for any company to look at and see how they're aligned to those factors that have been shown that indeed if these things are done, they contribute to a more effective product development process.
Yes, exactly. And I think for me, it's not so much understanding or using the factors. It's the discussion that is focused around these factors that's really important. It's having a conversation across various functions within a company or an organization that leads you to a better understanding of how your company is performing. And the factors really give you a framework that you can actually base your discussion around. My experience is that once you start doing this in organizations, people become curious and interested in product development as in its basic fundamentals, its basic principles, and they start to dig into what is really important within their organization. I tend to refer to these key areas that should be addressed as sweet spots, the spots that if you touch them are really going to make a difference. And I think that's the key thing when you're defining factors or metrics, that contributing metrics is to identify a small number of what I call sweet spots, and don't overdo it. Try to get those right and then move on to another series of sweet spots and continuously look for areas of improvement.
So let me try a little scenario with you. If I was to ask you to step into the shoes of a consultant, and an organization said, you know, we know we can be doing a better job with our product development process. We want to take it up a notch, get to the next level. And they call you up and say, you know, Dr. Anderson, can you come help us? We know you've been successful in other places doing this. Where would you start? How would you understand what they're doing and what kind of conversations would you be having? And I know that's a really big question. We don't have time for all the details, but just where would you start in that analysis?
I think the first thing is that I wouldn't necessarily do the analysis myself, and I'm not sure that you're inferring that, but I think what I'd probably do is to try to identify an individual or individuals within the company who have an empathy with product development and either understand the basic principles of product development from theory and best practice, and I would engage them in a conversation. I traditionally within companies also use my own little questionnaire, which actually asks various people across the company to assess how they're performing against some of these key contributing factors, and there's a whole list of them. And again, I do it under the doing things right, doing the right things, and measuring results, and the culture, climate, and organization. And what tends to happen is that I see people in manufacturing giving a high score to certain factors. And I see people from marketing potentially giving a low score to the same factor. So this actually then provokes a discussion among the different functions within the company as to why is giving a high and why the other is giving a low. And this conversation then leads to, I guess, to an unpicking of what they are actually doing in practice. And that's how I tend to approach it within organizations, is just to get that conversation going at a practical level across the various functions.
Very good. And the questionnaire that you spoke of that you would use for this, is that a tool that you put together yourself? And by chance, is it publicly available?
The answer is yes and no.
Okay.
I did put it together myself some time ago. I use it whenever I'm speaking with companies. I do a little bit of NPDP training, new product development professional training myself, not so much in New Zealand, but mainly in Asian countries. I tend to hand this questionnaire out to participants at gatherings like that. But no, it is not publicly available.
Okay. But it is an assessment tool based on these factors that you've been talking about to help people in organizations kind of understand where they are now with this framework.
It is. But the important thing, which I can't emphasize enough, is that it's about getting an understanding from across the organization, not from the department that runs the product development within the organization. It's getting it from finance, from marketing, from supply chain, from manufacturing, so that you can start to unpick where there are areas of agreement or disagreement, so that that again provokes a discussion, because discussion then leads to learning, hopefully, which I think is vitally important.
Yeah, and that whole system perspective, right, across the organization, taking that holistic viewpoint, is so important to what we do in product development and product management, because it's inherently a cross-functional job, right? We're impacting each element of the organization when we're developing a product and managing it in the marketplace. And if you're just focused on one aspect, like if there happens to be a group responsible for innovation, you're missing out on potential synergies that could be taking place across the organization. And I really appreciate you underscoring the importance of getting input from across the organization.
I think there's one additional benefit here, which is extraordinarily important, which comes back to the paint by numbers approach that I was critical of at the outset, and that is that if you engage representatives from across the organization in this discussion process, which then leads to practices and processes around product development, you'll actually see greater ownership and greater commitment to the processes and practices that you put in place, which I think is extraordinarily important.
None of us tend to run in and embrace change, and getting people on board with the possibilities and letting them create those themselves certainly helps to manage moving to a new place and transforming the organization for product development. And as you said before, you've seen employees get much more excited by being part of the process.
Absolutely.
Very good. So let's talk about a specific organization, if we can. A place where indeed you have seen the use of these contributing metrics put into action, and then how that really impacted the organization. Do you have an example you can share with us?
Well, I started sharing that example earlier on, which was the one which actually laid the foundation for a lot of my thinking today, which was this New Zealand dairy industry. I, as I said, was the chief executive of an R&D organization, which had about 400 employees. It was the largest dairy research organization in the world. It operated separately from the manufacturing and the marketing arms of the industry. So getting cohesion or getting the various groups to work together was even more challenging than in a normal company situation. So as I mentioned, going through the process of benchmarking and defining the important metrics or factors for our organization or a company actually led to discussions across the manufacturing, marketing, and the R&D sectors of the organization. Which actually brought them together, not only in terms of defining practices for product development, but brought them together as a more cohesive team in terms of overall better business management and cooperation. And so for me, it really taught me that it's not all about just writing processes and practices down on pieces of paper or having them on a computer. It's about people. And it's about people talking to people and people committing to one approach and being aligned against that approach. It was an amazingly important learning process for me, and I think it was extraordinarily valuable for the organization because it saw us, I mean, interestingly, as a result of this, the three branches of this particular dairy industry in New Zealand came together finally into one large company, which is currently called Fonterra, which is, again, the largest tradable dairy product company in the world. So I think it didn't necessarily lead to the formation of that company, but it was certainly an important contributing aspect to it.
So the collaborative nature, that collaboration sounds like that was a really key to your learning experience, but also key to the organization moving forward on making any changes.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I taught product development at university well before I got into this role. And I followed religiously the product development process when I was actually teaching it to not only students, but companies outside of the university. And I think this was a real eye-opener to me going through this whole process at that stage that at the end of the day, processes are only useful in the hands of people who really want to make them work. And so people, the climate, the environment of the organization, the culture that you create with an organization are far more important than the processes that are in place.
You know, that's a highly sociable sharing phrase you just said there, that processes are only useful in hands of people that want to make them work. I thought that was great.
Okay.
But, you know, just instilling a process in an organization doesn't necessarily mean that's going to take effect or have the outcomes that we desire. And I'm sure listeners right now are wondering, would like to get some more, you know, meat, some more depth into what these factors are. You shared, you know, some examples of the right things earlier that was real helpful, you know, in terms of connecting to the business strategy, you know, clear support for that, portfolio management. Where could we go to get more detail like that? Would it be the CPAS study?
Yes. I mean, a lot of what I'm going to talk about at the conference, the PDMA conference at Anaheim, is our examples founded off the factors that have been identified within the CPAS study.
Okay.
So you can refer to that through just going onto the PDMA website and just searching for CPAS on there, or alternatively, just going to the Journal of Product Innovation Management and doing a search against CPAS results 2012.
And I will try to provide links in the show notes to make that a little bit easier for people too. And I was curious, you mentioned in that example about doing benchmarking, and I wasn't sure if you were talking about against the those published factors or if you actually did look at other organizations and what they were doing for best practices.
Okay, well, we did a whole variety of things. We did we benchmarked against the kind of CPAS results or research that we'd actually read in journals. We did actually benchmark against international companies. Interestingly, when we did our benchmarking, we were doing it primarily against on product development or research and development. We didn't just benchmark against international companies in the food sector. We actually looked at companies outside of the food sector as well. Mm-hmm. We also, I'm not sure whether this is a correct definition, but we did our own form of what we called internal benchmarking, where we actually use the Cooper model, the probe survey, I think it's called, for doing things right, and the strategic decisions group in Northern California, we use their model for actually doing the right things. So we put all this together, and then finally we actually engaged Arthur D. Little to assist us in looking at the kind of metrics that we could use to wrap around all of that. So we did a whole variety of things, but the answer is yes, we did look externally, and we did look to companies not only within the food industry but outside of the food industry.
Yeah, and it sounds like applying a lot of concrete tools to actually help you with this. And I think two of the themes that stand out to me as we're talking for the Everyday Innovators listening is one, the when you're looking at a new product development process, it takes the entire organization to think about that. It doesn't just stand in one place, and you should not expect to just go find one off the shelf and have it do what you need it to do as an organization. And the other one was the collaborative requirements of that, right? That you really do need to be engaging people, talking with them, and letting them drive this, and letting them, everyone be excited about what a new process might do for the organization and what their role in that is.
Very good. I think you've wrapped it up in 30 seconds, what we tried to talk about.
Very good. So as listeners know, I also always ask for an innovation quote towards the end of the interviews. What did you bring for us, and why did you choose it?
So the quote is, we haven't got the money, so we've got to think. Or we ain't got the money, so we got to think. Now, this is actually attributed to Sir Ernest Rutherford, okay. Who was the first to break the atom, and unbeknown to a lot of people, he actually was born in New Zealand. So in a little city called Nelson in the top of the South Island of New Zealand. Now, why it appeals to me, and I think why he apparently said this in the first place, was that New Zealand is a relatively small country. It has 4 million people and about 40 million sheep. And we don't have the kind of wealth that possibly the United States or many other countries in the world have. So we don't have the money to throw behind our product development that a number of large corporations around the world have. So we've got this this analogy, which we use in New Zealand, is that we use the number 8 fencing wire approach. Now, New Zealand farms have around them a number of fences, which are basically wire fences. Number 8 fencing wire is a size or diameter of a particular fencing wire. And people believe in New Zealand that New Zealanders can actually use number 8 fencing wire to solve any problem. So New Zealanders are seen as very say innovative or creative and innovative. They take initiative, they solve problems, and they don't necessarily have to have money thrown at the problems. So for me, I think this is extremely important because it says that from a product development perspective, money doesn't always solve your problems. You really have to think carefully through the solutions and use your initiative, use people well, use the creativity. Don't just rely on money.
Excellent. And that's new for me to understand what the number 8 fencing wire is. And here in the U.S., my grandfather would have said binding wire, which I'm not exactly sure what binding wire is, but apparently you use binding wire to fix anything.
That's right.
Back on the farm. So, yeah, love the idea. And great quote. And maybe even if you do have the money, you still have to think. That's the key principle.
I hope so.
Thanks so much for sharing some of your experience and thoughts on how organizations can look at improving or adopting a new product development process and making that more successful in their organization. Just to wrap up, what do you want to leave listeners with in terms of if to follow your work any or understand what you're doing there at the university or any of the other hats that you have on? How can they find out more about you?
I work at Massey University, Massey in New Zealand. So just log on to that website and find me on there. I do have a LinkedIn page. I don't actively participate a lot in discussions around there, but and also through the PDMA network, through the PDMA.org website. I tend to go beneath the radar a lot, Chad. I don't tend to promote myself that openly these days because I'm not seeking consultancy work anymore, and so self-promotion is not as important as it used to be.
I'm sure you're, the students that you have there at Massey are enjoying the work that you do with them, and you have great experience to bring to them and help prepare them for product development. So, Alan, thanks so much for your time, and appreciate you taking it with us.
And thank you, Chad. Appreciated the opportunity.
Everyday Innovators, thank you once again for listening to this podcast and telling your colleagues about it. Certainly sharing the information will help them just like it's helping you. Find the show notes and details of the discussion at theeverydayinnovator.com/043. And I did try to add additional information about those factors, the metrics that were discussed in the interview. So find those at theeverydayinnovator.com/043. And thanks to productinnovationeducators.com, your one source for online product management and innovation training to help you stand out.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.